All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of The Forrest Stevens Show. I'm going to start off by reading my latest thought that I've written down. Not everything makes it to the page. This one did. A lot of thoughts I just think and pass on by. But this one, I wrote it down for some reason. So I'm going to read it out and we'll just get into it. When something is challenging, it doesn't mean that it is worth doing or not doing. But it does mean that it gets done less. Huh, okay. Well, I guess that's true. there's a lot of different factors that go into things that are worth doing. But that's not really what I'm getting at here. I think my last sentence is really the driving force of this thought, which is essentially when something is challenging, it gets done less. I think ambition and motivation and drive, I think those are super important, because without them, we don't do anything. Without them, we have no reason. But you also need a reason to then create those feelings of ambition and drive. You have to have a vision of how your world can be different in the future. Because it's very rare that we can really experience this exact moment that we live in. Most of what we are doing for our future. If you want to experience something, if you want to go on a trip, if you want to own something, if you want to do something, you have to prepare now. You have to do something now to get yourself into that position so that that is what is happening in the future. And there's a lot of things that I think we as individuals want to do, we want to accomplish. And I think without that feeling of want, we will not do. That's what's so interesting, is there has to be something driving the motivation itself. Right? It's not enough to have drive, just senseless drive. You need to have drive that is driving down the road. You know, when you drive a car, you don't just randomly go, or you don't just go in a straight line to whatever you want either. There's a whole road, there's a path to get to what you want. And if you're a good driver, you'll get there safely, you'll get there quickly, you'll get there without incident. And if you're a bad driver, if you don't know where you're going, if you have no GPS to the destination, if you have no map, if you're on the side of the road and there's nobody you can ask questions to say, how do I get to this place I want to be? And you have no idea how to get there, then you will take longer and you might have more incident. So that is a large analogy about driving. That relates to our lives. You know, everything relates back to our lives. And I think there's something interesting there in that first sentence as well. When something is challenging, there are lots of things that are challenging in our lives. And sometimes just because they're challenging, it can make them seem worth doing. Especially when you don't have clear vision of what you want to do. I think that people will intentionally create a fight for them to be engaged in because that feels like it's important, even if it's not actually important to your own individual life. I think it's important to do things for yourself and realize that what you do for yourself is also doing for whatever future family you have and whatever future friends you have. I mean, doing for yourself is for whatever future you have, and not just, I mean, there's no way to live in this world and not affect the world, not affect the people around you. There's no possible way. And if we go even deeper than that, you're affecting the world around you, not just people. Think about what I'm saying here is, like, there's what my hypothesis is that there's no way to not have an effect on the world. That's basically what I'm saying. So let's go to the extreme of that. Is there a way? We'll test my hypothesis with a scenario. If you were to hermit yourself away so far from civilization that you literally do not see another person, are you bringing things with you? Did you buy those things? Did those things, were they made by somebody? Was that somebody an employee that earned income and created value for a company? Did that company do something else? Did that company work with other companies to produce the base materials? Did those base materials get mined out of the ground or grown or created in some way? So let's even go further than that. You did not bring anything with you. Now you're just living basically as one of the participants on the TV show alone. And you can see that that's a very, very hard life to exist in. And that entire time, those people are taking from what's around them. They are surviving. They are taking lives to eat, which in the lives of snails, in the lives of fish, in the lives of animals. They are picking from plants to eat. They are disturbing grounds to build. They are burning logs. They're, you know, creating disruptions in where that log fell. They are having an effect on all of the different insects and life that called that log a home temporarily or whatever. And they are having an impact on the world. They're having an impact on themselves. And there is a lot of different opportunities that they could have had if they weren't living that way. And so they're having an effect by not having an effect as well. So you cannot take yourself out of this world. And I guess we could go all the way to the most extreme case. The only way, I mean, and even this I'm proving wrong, but I was going to say the only way to not have an effect on the world is to die and to be gone and not in this world. But that has an effect on the world. That loss of life will affect people. And that space that you were existing in, the money that you held, the assets you owned, all of those being distributed, that all is having an effect. I mean, you can iron out the timeline of existence as a species, or even as a species, and you can see that that effect you had on the world is not noticeable in the grand scheme of effects, because there's been so many years and so much happening. But that's only one way to look at the world and our existence as a species, and it actually is a very arbitrary way to look at the universe. It's when is it ever actually reality and not just a thought experiment, when you're looking at human existence over millions of years on a timeline? I mean, that is just, it's not really practical in your actual life. It's a thought experiment. It's a way to think about something, but it's not really reality. It's not our day-to-day. That is not part of our day-to-day. It's very abstract to look at something as a timeline. And what we really have as humans are choices and options and the ability to do certain things and to not do other things. So that comes back and connects into my analogy of driving. If you are going to have an effect on this world, do you want to know how to drive or not? And that extends to everything else. If you want to make a film, do you want to learn how to become a filmmaker? Do you know how to make films? If you don't, do you need to learn? And how can you learn? What are the options for you in your situation? And I think the internet is the greatest equalizer we have ever seen as far as education. And I think that basically the amount that certain education costs is criminal and completely unnecessary in this moment. There are certain educational systems that are worth their money and maybe even worth more than what they cost. And there are many that are worth a lot less because of the internet. Everything is on the internet because it's its own complete world of existence. Everything is on the internet because everyone is on the internet. And I'm not saying that literally, but I'm saying enough of the world is that enough of the information is there. And it's just as much, actually it's more than the information that is anywhere else in existence. Because to learn something at a school, I mean, to learn something before the internet, let's separate this school idea and more so just my idea there that the internet is the greatest equalizer of education that we've ever seen, is because if we go before the internet and if we go even further back in time, education was a very privileged thing, and it still is. But we can see examples where libraries are kept private, and you literally have to be, upper aristocrat, the bourgeoisie, to even afford. And this is still the case with Ivy League colleges to a degree and things like that. But so it's still playing out in the exact same way. And what I'm saying, it doesn't need to now that we have the internet. But education is this idea of a private database. What is a library but a database of information? And what is a school but a database of information that is saying, hey, and basically it's software, its user interface is a physical campus. It is a teacher that is giving a certain lecture or certain talk or going through a certain part of their physical database, whether it's a book, a textbook, or an online user face. Like, I mean, a lot of education is now through the internet and through their own private databases that are intertwined with the school. It's just very interesting. So there's all these public databases, right? There's all of these public databases that you pay very little for. You pay by there basically being advertisements, and so you're paying by being a consumer, by using Google, by using Reddit, forums, YouTube, all these, and there's also all sorts of different educational free course type things. What is Skillshare but a private database that you're paying a subscription for? What is Netflix? What is CuriosityStream? These are all just private databases to visually and audibly and just learn just from like a YouTube video, right? But it's paid for, and the quality is a certain caliber. And I suppose that is what you're paying for, or that's the perception of what you're paying for with colleges today, is the idea of quality of the private database. We are teaching you what you actually need to know. And there is some merit to that, but I think actually a lot of what has been sort of the underlying value of going to post-secondary for anything is a certificate, is a diploma, is a master's, is a doctorate. These certificates, they're all certificates of what you have done and what you have learned. You could be a doctor. You know, I saw a meme that was a picture from a hospital bed of the front desk area where his doctor was looking up a WikiHow page of how to wrap a broken ankle. That's a doctor doing that. And that was basically the caption, right? And it's like, how different is the public database from the private database, realistically? And this is partially why data is becoming so valuable, because of the different products that can be built on top of data. And a lot of that is advertising currently, but a lot of it is sales as well. A lot of it is a transaction. And, you know, the merchant class became that because they were in charge of the transaction. They made the difference between the bid and ask price of goods, of services. That is a way that a lot of people make money, is by buying something and selling something. It's how Amazon makes money. They make the difference between basically the bid and ask price. It can be labeled as service costs, listing costs, or processing costs, but it's basically a bid and ask price. And they're the people that own the market that the merchants are selling in, and they themselves are merchants as well. So let's look at a more concrete example of how you're paying for public databases. When you search something on Google, when you're trying to answer a question, the first 2 to 4 links are sponsored. If you click those links, you're a dumbass. Learn to not click those links, because they're not actually going to give you what you want anyway. They are going to direct you to a company that produces what you were looking for, but they're not going to actually bring up the exact page that you want. So they're not going to be as useful as the links underneath them. That's why they have to pay to be at the top, because they're actually less useful. So don't click those links. But if you do, you're paying to use that public database. And basically, that's how Google has made so much money. If you really think about it, it's for people clicking on something that was paid to be placed there. Now, they have some physical products. They have so many different streams of businesses, and they all benefit each other. That's what's so crazy about Google as a company, and that's what's so crazy about every single big tech company out there. Basically, Meta is the same to a lesser extent. Amazon is the same to a even more heightened extent, and Apple is the same, and probably the best at that, about having sort of all the different things that they work on relate to the other parts of their businesses and become even more profitable, have higher margins, and have just more ability within there to create more products and services. And that's why it's been such a successful company. Microsoft, again, very, very good at that. It's the interconnectedness of the ecosystems that they all create for each other. But all those companies, I mean, are not all those companies, but some of those companies that I mentioned, they participate in the public database access that we all have. It's crazy to me what YouTube is. YouTube can teach you so much. There's so many videos how to do things or what something is that it's almost impossible to compete in that space today. If you were to be a creator, like, you really have to do something different. And it's a very, very tough space to compete in with any sort of educational material, because there are so many other people doing it as well. But as a user of that public database, that's great. Who cares how hard it is for the creators to create that? And the other thing is too, is people are only being rewarded for creating content that is providing something to the database. Unfortunately, not everybody uses these resources as educational tools. They use them as entertainment. And we need to be entertained for some reason as individuals. And I feel that, you know, I feel not as much joy in my life when I am not entertained as much. That feeling of wanting something good to watch, of maybe escapism to a degree. I think if we get down to the root of it, and that is something to unpack. Why is it that we want to feel, why is it that we want escape? And what are we wanting escape from? We're wanting escape from something else that's going on in our lives, some other way of existing without that form of escapism. So I think it's important to think about education. And what is education for? Are you learning to drive and then never turning your car on? Are you never using it to transport yourself somewhere, to do something? Then what was that education for? There's a lot of things that it's like, education is just for like one little thing. And then it's like, I had to learn so much to just do one thing. And sometimes that's unavoidable because that thing that you have to do is very important in your life. Or, you know, it's sort of in the realm of like a make or break or of some other thing that's important, right? There's a lot of things, if you want to create something in this world, if you want to go somewhere, if you want to do something, it's not as simple as one action. There's all these other actions, and sometimes those actions need to be learned. Sometimes we need to learn those actions, even if we're not going to use them as a useful skill for anything else. But the beauty of learning something is that it stretches your brain, and it creates new connections so that when you learn something else, you have something to relate it to, possibly. So learning is never a bad thing for your brain, but there's the scholar who doesn't do anything. And is that a life that is well lived? I don't know. For me, I like a good combination of action and thought. I like a good combination, and I actually feel like I get very out of whack when those two things are unbalanced. I like a balanced life in a lot of different ways. I think about how different parts of our existence are connected, and that one takes from the other and one gives to another. And there's a lot of these different balancing acts going on in my life. And I feel like that's just a perspective that I have on my life. I think it could be looked at in different ways as well. So this all started from that last entry to my book. Right now, that is the last page, written page of my book that I'm hoping on publishing soon. Tripping. I talked about it in the last podcast. I'm talking about it again. It's called Tripping. And it's these thoughts that I have that I write down, and they've been edited. Like, I edited them so that they just make a little more sense in some cases, or they're even a little more expanded upon, more of a book format than just a scribbled down random thought. It's called editing. That's what people do to books, brother. And so that's my last written page. There's some blank pages after that with some instruction on how to create your own unique version of the book that I wrote, which is kind of a cool concept, I guess. It's probably not original. Someone else has probably done it. But what I wanted this book to be was a collection of my thoughts for you to expand on as a reader on that page, and then to have your own. And so even though there's going to be one edition, and although I might change that and I might make a second edition of the same book or whatever, each book that somebody buys will become another edition, basically their own unique edition. And it's different than anybody else's. If you write anything in it, it's different than anybody else's, in that you've actually created your own version of this book. And I think that's a really cool idea. I like that idea of just these books floating around that might get passed on, might get read by someone else, might get bought by somebody else, used even, and that it's its own version. So it's encouraged to write your own tripping thoughts. Now, the other thing about the book that I didn't mention in the previous pod was it's not only thoughts that I've had when I'm under some sort of psychoactive experience. It's just thoughts that are trippy. And you can have those when you're not stoned. Imagine that. Imagine having a crazy thought. The other thing, you know, there's this whole preface in the book that I wrote, but these thoughts that I write down, they're thoughts. Like, a thought is not something that you can really control. Like, even right now, I'm letting basically my thoughts happen, and I'm saying them out loud instead of having them in my own mind. And there is a little bit of a second kind of thought going on that kind of distracts me out of this sometimes, and there's these big pauses that I edit out. Because I start thinking about the leaves outside, out my window, as I sit here and talk to this microphone. I start thinking about the microphone itself, and that trips me up. And that is why this book is called Tripping, is because when you have a thought and you become aware of that thought, it feels like you're physically tripping, but mentally. It feels like you're mentally tripping. You're mentally getting stuck up on something. You're stubbing your toe. You're stopping what you're doing. And you're now recognizing that thought. So we can recognize our thoughts. But we can't control our thoughts in the way of consciously trying to think of something. We can give our subconscious an idea and say, hey, think about this. But we're not actually constructing the thought that's happening in our minds. It's happening to us, is basically what I'm saying about thoughts. They happen to us, and sometimes our thoughts are dark. Sometimes our thoughts are mean. Sometimes our thoughts are hateful. Sometimes our thoughts are lying. Sometimes our thoughts are malicious. Sometimes our thoughts are not good, is basically what I'm saying. But that doesn't mean that you're not good. That means that it's basically like if you start believing your thoughts are not, you know? That's the other thing too, is like our thoughts are just happening to us, and we don't need to feel our thoughts at every single moment. And I would say it's unhealthy too, actually. We can be like, hey, that was just a thought. And, you know, if we become aware of our thoughts in the moment, if we have a hateful thought pop into our head that we did not construct but was constructed for us, and we became aware of, and we actually became aware of that thought, and we said, and you can actually talk to your subconscious. That's what's so crazy, is you can say, you know, you have something come in, you say, oh, I really don't like that person. And then you recognize that your subconscious thought that, and you say, okay, that's okay that you feel that way, but we're going to make a conscious choice to be nice to that person anyway, or just to understand that that person is the way they are because of everything that's happened to them and everything they've done. And actually, a very interesting thought that I have, a hypothesis that I have, that I've heard picked up along life's journey, is that if you had the exact same experiences as that other person that you're thinking about, you would be exactly the same way that they are, because they are not you, and they don't have the same thoughts that you have. They are completely different because of the entirely different person that they are. And if you were that person, you would be exactly the way that they are. If you were them, but also you, then you would be so different than that person, because that's a different person. So that is something that I think about. So if you had a hateful thought about someone else, and then you were aware of it, and you brought that thought consciously, that construct, that idea, that belief that everybody is the way that they are, and that's okay. then that might give that subconscious a little bit of a pause and say, okay, I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to bring those hateful thoughts into your mind. You're dissipating that hate with awareness or whatever the other feeling is. We used hate as an example in this idea. And then you'll literally just start having other thoughts. Like, you will have other thoughts about other things, and they might be bad thoughts as well. Bad with quotation marks. As a kid, I always thought when people did that, it was bunny ears. And I was like, why are people doing bunny ears around certain words that they say in a sentence? Never understood it. I saw it when I was maybe 6, 7, but that was the first time I really saw somebody. It was my choir teacher at the school I went to as a kid. I would oftentimes do that. Oh,
I'm getting a spam call, I think.
1 second. And I guess I'd never seen any of my parents or my siblings do that before, or anyone on TV, because I could not figure out what it was. I thought it was bunny ears that she was doing with her fingers, and it was very confusing to me. But if you're having those bad thoughts, you might have more bad thoughts, even after bringing awareness to a specific thought. It's not a cure-all. It's not going to change your mind in such a drastic way that it's permanent immediately. It's a work in progress to change your mind about things and to change the way your subconscious thinks and the way the internal dialogue that most of us have. It's crazy. Some people don't have that. I don't understand how they're alive, what they're doing in life. I do not understand how that existence works if you do not have an internal dialogue, because I definitely do. And it's unconscious and subconscious, and it happens to you. And if you bring that conscious awareness to it over time, you can change your mind. But it takes a lot of effort, and it is not a silver bullet, as anything is. Nothing's a silver bullet. Silver bullets aren't a thing. Prove me wrong. In the thing on Spotify, you can answer a question: how was today's episode? Prove me wrong that there's a silver bullet in this world, besides a literally physical silver bullet. I don't know anything that can be cured outright. I don't know any alt-right people that can be cured of that disease. that was today's episode. I hope you enjoyed, and if you did, good. If you didn't, that sucks. I don't know why you're still listening to this at this point. If you didn't enjoy this, keep listening, I guess. Maybe you'll enjoy the next one. I don't know. Thanks, everyone, for listening.